irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I have one of my favorite co-hosts slash guest hosts here with me, Allison Garrido. Allison is a passionate career coach. She helps her clients identify their strengths and create a path towards a fulfilling career. She also provides intensive resume review and interview preparation. Allison has extensive human resources experience, and during her time in HR, she coached staff members at all levels around performance reviews and facilitated off-site and in-house trainings. She now facilitates an original workshop series for those making career transitions. Allison studied psychology at Northeastern University and is a certified professional coach through the International Coach Academy. Allison, I'm so happy you made it back from Brazil alive and that you were able to join us here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be back.
Yes, it's always great. And in fact, before we get started with today's show, which as the last Monday of the month has now become our mock interview Mondays, let's talk a little bit about the upcoming show that you're going to be doing on Labor Day for us.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to guest host again on the 5th. So at that time, I'll have Lori Firestone Seidelman on the show. Lori's a close friend and also a professional coach who helps people really identify what she calls their genius work and helps them, and you know, to use a silly slang term, she helps people really toot their own horn.
That's something we all need.
Absolutely. So she's going to really help us describe a structure around how we tell people what we're good at and what differentiates us from the competition.
Oh, that's great. I think that's so valuable because it's just that certain je ne sais quoi, that certain something that people have, and some people have it and some don't, but it's something you can learn. And if you can get somebody like Lori to train and develop you and teach you how to do that, I think that's something that can be a really valuable asset for anybody out there in the interviewing world.
Absolutely. I think it'll really help people both with interviews and with deciding what their path should be. So when you're deciding what your genius work is, it might help you realize that it's a different path that you might want to explore.
Yeah, I think so often that we find people who are just in the wrong careers for most of their adult life, and some people never even give it a shot to change. In fact, on September 19th, I'm having a dear friend and awesome, awesome gentleman on the show, John Rubenow, who started his career as a doctor and actually went to medical school, spent 10 years getting, you know, practicing and being a doctor, and realized it wasn't his life path.
Wow.
And did a 180-degree turn, and wound up actually becoming a voiceover actor and now has his own pro ball group.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
It's a big change.
Yeah. So about today's show, though, today we're going to do something interesting for our listeners out there. The last Monday of every month, we do a mock interview Monday where a job seeker can come in and get complimentary coaching from myself and another coach such as Allison. And today, because life does happen, people, there was traffic. There were accidents on the 101. So the person who we're going to be offering coaching to today, of course, got stuck in traffic. And it's something that we've all experienced in the real world, that it's rare you actually get to see how does somebody recover when they're walking into an interview and how do they handle themselves. So part of today's mock interview is going to be a little bit unique in that when our guest joins us, Mike, we're going to jump right into the interview as you would traditionally if you were showing up for a real interview. And then he'll get feedback and coaching at the end of how he handled that particular transition.
Absolutely. Any time during an interview that you stumble a little bit, it can be really hard to recover and stay in the moment and realize you just need to move forward and still perform in the best possible way. And that can be so hard for people.
But you can recover from it. It's really interesting because it was only about 2 or 3 weeks ago that I had this happen on the recruitment side with my company, J. Hill Staffing. Mm-hmm. And it's our worst fear when we get a call from our client saying, where is XYZ person? You've basically written that whole interview off as in this person's not even going to show up and or be considered for the job. And in this particular case, this individual was 30 minutes late. She thought her interview was at 8:30, but it was actually at 8.
Oh, dear.
She recovered, though. She went in there. She aced the testing. She got the offer, and she starts in less than 2 weeks.
Absolutely. She sounds like she was calm, cool, and collected, even though it was a rattling experience.
Yeah, and it can be. And the interesting thing is, being on our side of the table, because, of course, you were in human resources for many years, mm-hmm. and I've been on the recruiting side of things for about 13 years now, what's fascinating is I would do this sometimes when I would offer classes at the Microsoft store, and on my Interviewing 101 class, I'll never forget, I was next door, and I was intentionally running late. I think I was at the at a restaurant next door, and so I showed up to my own class that I was teaching about 5 to 10 minutes late, and I rolled in there, and I was just disheveled, and I had a bag over my shoulder, and I just was completely discombobulated, and I didn't apologize to the audience, and I had a full audience of about 40 people at this particular class, and I gave it about 5 minutes, and you could tell the audience was furious with me.
Absolutely. I can't imagine sitting waiting and then not receiving
You're
an
like,
apology.
Where is the presenter? Right. And then she shows up, and I'm all disheveled, and I'm not even apologizing for being late. Mm-hmm. And so the interesting thing was, is that when I got about 5 minutes in, you could tell people were getting irked about it. Mm-hmm. I said, so what was it like for you? And everybody was taken aback, and they said, excuse me? And I said, yeah, you think I wasn't here a half hour early? Mm-hmm. I've just been sitting next door biding my time. I wanted you, as the job seekers, to know what it's like to be, you know, the one who's waiting for somebody, mm-hmm. and to not have somebody apologize. That can be one of the worst things that you can do in an interview, is sometimes people will just sweep it under the rug and not even apologize or acknowledge that they were late. And
Absolutely.
That can be the kiss of death.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When people are just waiting for that acknowledgement, waiting for you to say what happened. Because, like you said, life happens.
Yeah.
No one's perfect. Sometimes things just don't go as planned, but it's how you recover, how you fess up to the error, or really explain that it's not common. Or
yeah, it's an accountability thing. And the thing I think that it comes down to is keeping your word. Mm-hmm. If you do it one time, we've all had a circumstance or situation, whether it's been a loved one, a dog, a cat, a God knows what, a traffic, an accident. But if it's a regular occurrence, that's where actually one of my clients had hired this amazing person a couple of years back. And I said, how is ABC person doing? And she said, Jen, she has this issue. She's perpetually late. And she finally came to me. And she's a wonderful, talented person at what she does. Mm-hmm. And apparently she went to my client and said, listen, I figured out what I need. If you just give me a 9:30 start time, it'll all work out. I'll never be late again. And this person has this new time of 9:30, showed up 17 times late in a month. It's like, as an HR person, it's your worst nightmare, because you have somebody who's qualified and capable of doing the job, mm-hmm. and then lo and behold, you know, they keep no-showing or showing up late, and that's what we call patterning in the HR
mm-hmm.
world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it can feel disrespectful. You know, people really expect you to be there and be on time, so really helping people understand that it is not a disrespectful thing, and staying authentic. If you made a mistake, Fess up and move on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and the thing is, too, this is another interesting thing that I didn't realize until I started learning a little bit about HR for any of our listeners out there. There is actually something called patterning, where if you miss Mondays and Fridays regularly, so this is actually, once you get the job, how you could wind up losing it, is if you're regularly calling in sick to work on a Monday, or taking a Monday or Friday off as a quote-unquote sick day, your employer can track that, and that is something called patterning, which is cause for termination. Actually in the state of California.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, so it's something really interesting. So speaking of which, I think our interviewee is about to join the room here. Terrific. So for those of you just tuning in, this is Get Yourself the Job on LA Talk Radio, and we're about to do our mock interview Monday. So joining us today, we have Mike, and Mike is just sitting down to join us for an interview with Allison. So I will go ahead and let you guys take it from here.
Well, hi, Mike. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi. Sorry about the lateness. Traffic was a little more difficult than I had planned today. So.
Oh, dear. Where are you coming from?
I'm coming from downtown LA, so right up the street from USC, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it can be tricky getting up here from there.
Yeah, it said 35 minutes. It took about an hour 15. So.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Dear. Well, we're pleased that you're here with us today.
Me too.
Thank you for
too.
Joining us. So we really appreciate you coming in to talk about this position. I was hoping you could take a moment first and just tell me a little about yourself.
Okay. Well, recently, so I lived in Phoenix my entire life, and then a friend of mine actually got a job out here just recently in March, and he fell in love with it, and it was a job in the YouTube space. Oh. So it was dealing with customers on YouTube that had either made successful videos or had successful channels. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of reaching out to them, seeing if they want to put advertising on to their videos. So kind of in a random happenstance, they ended up having a couple of jobs available. And so he reached out to me, and I was like, yeah, of course, that sounds like a lot of fun. So on a whim, came out here, and that was a fantastic job for a couple of months. It was a startup, so they kind of had to go around and secure funding. They weren't able to secure their Series 2 funding, so with that, no funding, they had to lay off about 90 to 95% of the workforce. So that's kind of my most recent history, but before that, it was kind of living in Phoenix and dealing with the heat and doing all of that. So
okay. Mm-hmm. And so now you're between jobs and looking for a new role. What are you looking for in your next role?
I've done a little bit of everything. I've done a lot in tech. So I've worked at Apple, kind of teaching people how to use technology, and then as well as using their products. I grew up in a very tech-savvy family. My dad did a lot of, like, he always had electronics or was working and kind of tinkering on stuff. Mm-hmm. But from that, I've also worked a lot of retail. I did work in hospitality for a little while. I worked in the hotel industry. From there, I've also done many, many hours of customer service. So that's a big passion of mine, is helping people in any sort of capacity. So it doesn't necessarily have to be in technology. It could be, you know, just kind of helping them flip a bad experience into a good one. So that's something I enjoy doing.
Great. Tell me about a time that you did that it went really well.
Yeah. So there have been a couple. I would say this was more of like kind of just spotting the need and kind of fulfilling that for that person. So gosh, this would have been, I think, back in 2009. I really enjoy this story. That's why I'm like kind of diving back into my box here.
Okay.
So a customer came in to the Apple store, and we had recently come out with the newest operating system, and this was back when they still charged for their operating systems. And so he was like, okay, well, I really want to be a studio musician, and I want to create my own music. Mm-hmm. And from what he was looking at, he's like, well, I think this is all I need. Mm-hmm. And so kind of talking to him and figuring out what computer that he had and what he wanted to do, it was like he was trying to take a lawnmower and put it into like the Kentucky Derby. And so he was kind of getting a little bit ahead of himself in terms of what his scope was, which is totally fine. I love when people have that sort of drive and passion.
Sure.
And so at the end of the day, because we were able to offer financing on him and he had really good credit, he was able to apply for whatever in-store card we had. I think it was through Barclay at the time. And we were able to get him out on the road as well as with like a year of training in our store. So he got set up with the correct computer that would allow him to do what he wanted to do, but also the resources. And through my career at Apple, because I started off as a salesperson, then I worked my way up into becoming a trainer. Mm-hmm. And then I got certified in studio music software, and I ended up teaching him how to do his music. So it was like, it was just this weird kind of thing where it was a sale that ended up, we kind of spotted what he needed, and then it paid dividends 2 years down the road when it was, oh my gosh, he's like, you're the guy that sold me all this stuff. Now I need to have this training. So
Wow. That's
pretty neat.
And so you were lucky enough to see that customer through
Yeah. The
whole process.
Exactly. And kind of his evolution, and he came from the PC world, so Mac was like a really huge step for him. So yeah, it was pretty interesting to watch.
That's exciting. Yeah. Your love for helping people really comes through.
Oh, thank you.
When you talk about it. That's great. So can you share another time, like maybe in your most recent role, where something you really enjoyed about that role?
Yeah. So in the last role, because we were kind of reaching out to anyone and everyone, so there would be times where I would talk to a customer in Pakistan or Brazil. It wasn't necessarily just like English speaking content. Mm-hmm. But I did have one customer early on who he writes his own music. He does mostly like wedding songs, so like the song that you want to walk down the aisle to or have kind of in the background while people are kind of milling about at the reception. Mm-hmm. And so it was very interesting for him because he was very tied to his music, of course. It was something that he created. And kind of talking to him both on the phone and then over email, he was really worried that the advertisements would kind of impact his not necessarily his viewership, but you know, they might see an advertisement for somebody else's music on his channel.
Sure.
The good thing about the advertisements that we put on is they would go to watch his video and it would be something like a Downy commercial, mm-hmm. or Tide or like a Hasbro commercial, whatever it happened to be. They usually tried to keep it away from kind of eating into their own market share.
Sure.
So once he was able to see that and kind of come over, then it was like the floodgates opened up. He was like, okay, what do I have to do? Here's some other friends that I have that are also in this space that could benefit from this. So it kind of turned into more of like a partnership in terms of not just helping him, but also helping other people that he knew. So that was pretty enjoyable. I mean, it was lucrative for the business, but it was also like nice kind of creating that connection with him. So
yeah, it sounds like you really have a personal touch.
Yeah,
there's not just numbers, right? But
yeah.
But real people and real areas where you can help them. That's wonderful.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Thank you.
So you talked a lot about customer service, mm-hmm. and you're clearly very strong in customer service and sales. Tell me about something that you're working on improving, something mm-hmm. in your professional life.
My thing in doing customer service, sometimes I find that you start to almost kind of put up these walls. Like you start to see the same issue over and over. So we start to lose more of that empathy towards the issue, because you see, so at customer service, pretty much in any job, you start to see the same 10 issues over and over again. Mm-hmm. So you start to create these robotic generated responses where you're like, I'm not really being me, I'm just saying what I've already said before.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not necessarily always listening to the person, you're just listening to the issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing, is kind of always kind of taking a step back and working on that empathy and saying, okay, well, where are they coming from in this? You know, and making sure, because a lot of times in customer service, people will be, they're going to be upset. Most of the time, people aren't reaching out to you because they're incredibly happy.
Mm-hmm.
It does happen.
I try so hard.
Yeah,
I always escalate when I have a good customer service experience.
Exactly.
Can I talk with your manager?
Yeah, can I speak to your manager? And they're like, oh, God, it's good. I promise it's a good thing. So, yeah, doing that whenever it's possible is always good. But always remembering, you know, maybe something bad happened to this person today. Maybe, you know, they were late for something and it's just they're stressing out. So kind of remembering, you know, they're not mad at you, they're mad at the problem, and taking that step back. So
that's a great tool to think of. Empathy
yeah.
is so important in customer service.
It really is.
So you're a recent graduate
mm-hmm.
from college. Tell me, you worked obviously your whole way through school. How
yeah.
did that balance look?
It was fun, actually, because most of my studies were in night school. I've had a couple of online classes, but I'm somebody that's very tactile, and I like to have that interpersonal connection. So the online stuff, I was like, it's nice. I'm glad we live in a day and age where we can do that, but I actually enjoyed having night school because there were college kids, and it was a community college, so it was college kids too. I had... it was like an 8-year-old woman in one of my classes who, she was like, I don't know, I was just kind of bored, so I took this class. And I was like, all right, there you go. So that's, it was kind of fun to do that. And then it was acting, so kind of parlaying it into doing theater and performing on stage. So that was fun.
Wow, that's exciting. Now, tell me, what were some of your favorite classes in school?
Let's see, probably my creative writing course that I took. Our teacher, she actually taught at ASU. She taught like English 101 and creative writing at ASU, And she actually stepped down from there because she didn't like how large the class sizes were. Mm-hmm. She felt like she wasn't getting to know her students. So she stepped down to go to community college where she's like, I can have a smaller class. This is the reason I wanted to teach. So she was incredibly passionate. It was one of those teachers where the first paper you turn in, even if it was the best thing in the world, you got a C on, because she's like, I know you can do better. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she was just, she was really good at pushing people to kind of outlive their potential and really find themselves. That's so amazing. Yeah, she was great.
Good. So building on favorites, tell mm-hmm. me about your favorite boss.
Ooh, gosh, I've got a couple. Yeah, one of them would be my manager, my store manager at Apple. I found out maybe 2 or 3 months into working there that he had like a secret passion of becoming a rapper. And so, he actually like had an album released on iTunes and everything. And it was just like, he was like, you would definitely assume it. He just had a very like, he had just an incredible posture, and when you were around him, you just had like this crazy energy. So you're like, I could totally see you being a rapper. You just have this presence to yourself. So, but not only that, he was like, kind of all over the place in terms of his, knowledge of like pop culture or music, whatever it happened to be. It was like, he always found something to make sure that he related to an employee. So, and he always went out of his way to make sure that he related to them. So, it was just, again, that kind of personal touch that made you say, you know, not only do I work for this company, but I also work for him, and he works for me. Like, I know he had my back in whatever issue that it was. Even if I was in the wrong, he would take me aside and be like, okay, do you see where you went wrong? Let's, you know, what can I do to help you kind of take those steps to get you kind of on the right path, or have you look at this issue differently, whatever it happened to be. It was just taking that extra time with the employees mm-hmm. and not treating us like another customer.
Sure.
So.
Sure. What about a work environment? What kind of company do you think is a great fit for you?
Oh, man. That's a great question. Give me one moment.
Of course.
I've worked in a little bit of everything. I've worked very independently in a few jobs, and I've worked in large teams. I think any company in order to really survive, it really comes down to how well they're able to communicate kind of top to bottom. So I've been at companies where it's very open communication, where you have a CEO that you're like, you just kind of, you can come into his office whenever and kind of talk to him about different issues. Mm-hmm. And then I've had the other one where there's a lot of walls kind of built up. You're not allowed to go here. You're not allowed to open up these kind of doors, and don't ask questions here. Kind of ask questions to your manager, and then maybe it'll get filtered up. So mm-hmm. Where I kind of thrive is that open door policy. So not really determinant on the size of the company, but just making sure that, you know, I feel like I'm actually contributing as a whole, rather than I'm just, you know, another ant marching along to whatever the queen's orders are. So, yeah, it just really depends. So,
okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Tell me, how would your friends describe you, Mike?
They would probably describe me as pretty goofy. In terms of like, I don't really mind in terms of like being the butt end of jokes. Like, I'm okay with taking the fall or taking the hit as long as the other people are enjoying themselves. With that, I've done like a lot of improv comedy, and I've done stand up a couple of times. So I don't mind being goofy or being funny. But on the other side, I can also kind of sit down with someone and have a really good heart to heart. And I think comedy is also a really good way to get into there, because through making someone laugh, you also kind of break down those barriers that they have set up. So it's kind of a double-edged blade sometimes. It's like, well, I'm not taking anything personally, but I know this will pay dividends in the long run as well.
Wow. So. Great. And then what about your boss or your coworkers? How would they describe you?
probably a little bit of the same, where kind of using humor to liven up the workplace. But also able, like, if you give me a task, like, I love being given that direction, but also saying, okay, well, here's the direction that we want you to end up in, like, go. And so finding my own kind of path to that end goal, similar to, like, I loved math growing up, and there's not just one way to solve a problem. There's usually a couple different ways that you can look at it. So I like having a little bit of that freedom with just a little bit of direction. So,
okay. Yeah. Thank you. And it's about time for us to wrap up. So okay. I'm wondering, what questions do you have for me?
What do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to answer. I'm going to just have you rattle them off.
Okay? Oh, sure, sure. Yeah.
What do I do?
Uh-huh. What are issues that you typically see on the job?
Okay.
And what kind of resources do you have for those?
Any others?
Are there any, like, fun perks to the office place? Sometimes there are, sometimes there's not.
Okay.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Okay, well, is that all for your
questions?
That
should be fun.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course.
We will be in touch about next steps.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, guys, that was fantastic. That was a lot of fun. How are you doing over there, Mike, after we just threw you right to the wolves, wolves being Allison as soon as you walked in the door?
Yeah,
are you alive? Are you okay?
Yeah.
Despite the 101?
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
I felt like you handled that well. Allison, what were your two cents as far as, like, how he transitioned walking in the door after being in traffic for an hour?
Absolutely. Very graceful, and you acknowledged it, and then you moved on quite quickly. You didn't need to dwell or feel uncomfortable. You were respectful and acknowledged that it happened and kind of kept things moving.
Yeah,
I think that's very valuable. We were talking about right before you came in, and again, this, I think that everything happens for a reason, and I think it was such a valuable lesson for our listeners to learn of how do you handle that. And Allison and I were just discussing some examples of where people have successfully made that transition and unsuccessfully made that transition. And one of the points that Allison just raised that I think is important for our listeners to know, if you show up late, be graceful, be tactful, and don't make a mountain out of a molehill, because if you bring it up 7 or 8 more times throughout the interview, you're going to keep redirecting the attention to your flaw. And what I really loved that you did, Mike, that was great, you acknowledged it, you apologized, you took responsibility, and then you launched right into the interview and you didn't harp on it, which I think that could have really derailed an interview. So I think it was very valuable the way you handled that.
Mm-hmm. And even if it was maybe going on in your head, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed, I'm so nervous, it did not show.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Was it going on in your head?
A little bit. It was kind of trying to switch my brain over into the stress of driving to kind of, oh, I need to take a step back here and look at myself for a second. So,
Yeah, it's interesting too. Coming from a male-female dynamic, or even masculine-feminine, one of my favorite authors and speakers is Alison Armstrong, and she talks about if you're dealing with either a testosterone-driven female or your traditional sort of male, you actually need transition time. So it's pretty impressive that you, being a male, were able to assimilate to the transition so easily. Because Alison will explain that if you're going from driving to walking into an interview, you often need time to actually mentally and physically transition. So what was pretty impressive that you did is you kind of transitioned yourself, probably going up the elevator or between the parking garage or while you were sitting here. So I think that's very valuable, is to learn how to calm yourself. Do you use any sort of meditative techniques or anything like that?
I do a little bit. I usually just take a couple deep breaths. I think a lot of it actually comes from just years of improv training in a weird way, because like the number one rule is yes and.
Oh, I love that.
And so you just have to go with whatever's presented with you, and you know, you turn a broom into like a mountain, whatever it happens to be, and whatever you're holding, that other person is gifting you with whatever their idea is, and so you just have to go with that flow. So
that's great.
Yeah.
And one other thing I wanted to just bring up that was really interesting that I've never seen somebody actually do in an interview, and I talk about a lot, and I'm sure you coach people on this as well. There was a question that you had asked him. I'd have to double check which question it was. And what you did is you actually paused. There was a moment where you said, That's a great question. Can I have a moment? Mm-hmm. And that is something that is such a valuable thing that a lot of job seekers skim over, is that they feel like they need to react rather than respond. There's a series of classes I'm doing right now that's all about being empowered and empowering in the workplace. And the number one rule for that is to respond rather than react. And what I love that you did is there was a question that she asked you, and you didn't have an answer right away, and you said, can I have a moment to do that? And I think that's something really important for our listeners to know, is that it is acceptable if you say, may I have a moment, and then respond after that, because I think that can completely shift the dynamic of the interview.
Absolutely. I was working with a client once, and we were doing something like this, a mock interview, and she would answer questions right away, and she answered them really well, and after she'd say, did that answer the question? And, you know, that's common. We were in that kind of environment for her to ask that. And then finally she said, I'm asking if I answered your question because I'm so nervous that I'm barely hearing the question.
Wow.
So it was so hard for her. So we worked a lot on just staying grounded and in the moment and being able to just be mindful of now I take a moment and I can move forward from there instead of just diving in and running with your fingers crossed.
Yeah. And how do you feel like it went for you, Mike, from a mock interview standpoint? Did you feel like if you were to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being you kicked ass and took names and 0 being could use a little work?
Yeah.
How would you rate yourself?
Probably a 7 or an 8, maybe. The only reason I say that is, one, I always feel like I can do better. But 2 would also be... typically, if I was going into a job, I do research kind of on the field, and I know a little bit more going into it. Whereas this, we didn't really have a subject. Exactly. So in that, it's like I didn't really have anything to pull from. And a lot of times, I'll even just look at like the job posting, and you'll see the same kind of buzzwords over and over again. And those are a lot of time what they're looking for, or what their industry uses, whatever it happens to be. So,
great. Yeah, I would agree with that. How would you rate it?
No, I mean, your interview was great. I have some things to mention that can be improved, but I'd love to just tap into that. Looking at the job description and seeing buzzwords, that is such a fantastic tool. You want to go into an interview already speaking their language.
Yeah.
Do they call employees, staff members, team members, whatever it is? Mm-hmm. If you can start to use that language, it just bridges the gap between you and them. You're already speaking like them. You feel like one of the people in that company, and that is just a tremendous, tremendous tool. I'm glad to hear you're using that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's great. I actually hadn't even thought of that, because for me, it's just I'm writing the job descriptions half the time, but I didn't even think of that, and that makes sense. And in the same way, when you're actually applying with a resume, there's so many of those resume search functions that you need to use those keywords, not only verbally, but also written on your resume.
Absolutely. So much of it is just making sure that they have that familiarity with you right away, where it feels natural, because it's so much an interview process is really about fit, right? If you're a smart person and you can do the job, there might be many people that are smart and can do the job, but do I want to sit next to them?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
One thing that was interesting when you opened up, like, again, you jumped right in there, which was great, and the kind of tell me a little bit about yourself or that opening question that Allison asked. One thing for anybody out there who's looking at relocating for a job, or you recently relocated, you may want to, in the future, bring up why you're going to stay in California. So say if you tell an employer, oh, yeah, I just relocated here from Phoenix. If you don't say anything beyond that, or if you don't elaborate on it, it could be a little bit off-putting, because the employer might go, oh, well, why are you here? And so if you're the one to bring it up, and if you say, gosh, I've always wanted to move in California. I grew up in Arizona, but my long-term plan had always been for me to land in California because I have friends and family here. That would at least make the employer feel a little bit more comfortable with you being here long term.
There's a lot of our lives that are based in circumstance, right? You move jobs because you move cities. There's a marriage, a divorce, a layoff. Whatever's happened has happened. But I do a lot of work with people where we, instead of talking about a career based in circumstance, we talk about a career based in strategy. And there's 3 things that I like to think about when you are answering the question, tell me about yourself. And it will be clear, succinct, and in control. And so those are the things that can really make that tell me about yourself feel great and help you have confidence. And there were some opportunities for you to take control.
Oh, I'm sure.
I think in that one, there was, you talked a lot about your friend, I wrote down, and it, you mentioned on a whim, you used the term on a whim in happenstance.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's really how it happened.
I
think
you were, you took a little more energy to relocate.
I don't think you gave yourself as much credit as you were due in that circumstance. So that's something to think about, because I know, like, you made that decision. You moved here. You loved your friend's job, and you had this interesting opportunity. So I would keep that in your mind too. Those three things: is clear, succinct, and in control. Because you nailed clear and succinct. It was short. You weren't rambly nervous, like it happens with a lot of people where they can't end the
it goes the on
story.
And on.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's something that you could tune into a little bit.
Okay.
One other interesting thing that I noticed when you opened up with that is that when you were talking about that, you said, "I do a lot of things." I think that Allison was asking you, "Oh, tell me a little bit about yourself." And so, and again, I get it, because we didn't actually have a job description, which we should have done for this. But in the future, you might want to hone in on one thing. Like, a lot of the interview wound up focused around customer service, which is great. Mm-hmm. And so instead of, when you tell an employer, "Oh, I'm kind of good at a lot of things," it can be a double-edged sword. Sure. You talked about the training aspect and the this, but even to focus just and hone in more succinctly on what it is you want to do for that company.
Yeah, definitely.
And a lot of times this comes up too on a resume, and it goes back to speaking the same language, is when you say "I do a lot of things" or on a resume, people always really want to use the term "etc." Because they say, "But I did so much more. I did so much more. I can't just end with this list." But when you say "etc." or "I do a lot of things," it invites people to fill in the blanks.
Brilliant.
I start to make assumptions about all the things you do, or I fill in the blanks in that list, and I don't even realize I'm doing it. But in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, a lot of things must mean this. So your voice is gone
when you
say that. So it's a real opportunity to take control again when you're saying exactly what you're good at. You're controlling the message.
I think that's fantastic. And I noticed early on, you said a couple of times, which took you out of the conversation, which is something common we see for a lot of people. And it's interesting, because even though we're here in the studio right now, when you went to answer a couple of the questions, you looked up a lot as opposed to looking at Allison. And so sometimes it can have, like, you gave great stories, Mike. I really want to acknowledge you, because of all the people I've ever interviewed, mock interviewed, et cetera, I was blown away by your really detailed SOAR examples, as Allison would call them. It was just really great how you had readily available these examples of circumstances and situations where you succeeded or impacted people. And so that was great. And the only thing I could see detracting in an interview is when you would look away when you're in the midst of sharing a brilliant point, as you're kind of looking up, and that could land, and that rapport could be even that much stronger when you're giving that example with that person.
Absolutely. Okay.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if every interview had someone just watching? Like Jennifer? Because I didn't catch that.
You caught some good stuff too, though.
but it's wonderful to have someone that's not involved in the conversation directly to see these things that are happening, maybe with your body language or the way that you're speaking.
It's funny you say that, really quick, for any of our listeners out there. That might be something. If, say, you have an interview and you don't have a career coach readily available or a recruiter, you might want to invite two of your friends and have one friend mock interview you and then the other one watch you. And it's really interesting. I just did like kind of a three-way share and pair in a class I was in a couple weeks ago. And what that other person observes, to have that observer, you can learn so much about yourself, not just from interviewing, but any interactions from a business manager to an employee. There's so many great opportunities, I think, to learn just by having that third-party observer.
I just did a workshop with a great group of women, and we were practicing our pitch, our tell me about yourself. And one of the things we did was we asked the person, like, what did you hear when I told you about myself? It's amazing, because, you know, maybe it's something, maybe it's perfect, and maybe it's exactly what you were trying to get across, but maybe it's not. And then you think, wow, I said this thing and someone heard something completely different than I anticipated.
Definitely.
I'm writing that down. That's brilliant. I'm doing a workshop and I'm stealing it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Please do.
So what were some of your other thoughts?
You nailed the weakness question.
Yeah.
It was a veiled weakness question of areas to improve. If I'd asked if you had a weakness, would it have felt scarier?
No, not really. I always find that as a weird question, because I think just in general, we don't always like to look at our weaknesses, mm-hmm. or we try to turn our weaknesses into strengths. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's the weaknesses that we don't know about are the ones that blindside us. Mm-hmm. So I think just from my experience and my working experience, that's where empathy kind of came into play, because mm-hmm. I noticed it in myself and I was like, well, if I'm noticing it now, that means it's been happening for a while. Mm-hmm. It was kind of flipping the table on that one. So
yeah, and I mean, what I heard when you were, so I'll tell you what I heard when sure. when you said mm-hmm. that, I heard that you are empathetic and you're always thinking about how you can be empathetic, mm-hmm. how you can personalize your customer service and remain in the moment so you're providing excellent customer service. I mean, the best way to answer that question is to think of an opportunity where you learned something mm-hmm. and you're still working on that thing, because it shows that you're a person that can reflect on something that isn't perfect and stay aware of it so you can improve. I mean, that was a fantastic, fantastic example.
Thank you.
Yeah, one, again, you really did a great job. I'm very, very impressed with the way that you interviewed Mike. It was great. One other thing, just from a constructive standpoint, mm-hmm. Because in LA, so many people move out here to get in the industry, mm-hmm. there were three or four occasions, oh, I love theater. Oh, I do improv. Now, what I love is you tied the improv and the comedy around to how that's going to be an asset to whoever you work for.
Sure.
But even the fact that it was peppered through the interview about four different occasions, I loved creative writing. I loved, improv, I love theater. And to me as an employer, it might say, oh gosh, is he really serious about, being in whatever profession this might be if it's not mm-hmm. an improv or entertainment related job.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a strong opening about your drive for customer service and your work history, I think it might even make that more of a side note, because you hammer the customer service mm-hmm. so hard, if you're able to do that in the beginning and give that great work history that you gave about how you've been in tech and that's a big part of your life and it doesn't have to be in tech, but customer service. I also really liked when I asked you about a great company fit, mm-hmm. you talked about a bad company fit in a very positive way.
Okay.
I missed that.
He folded in, so instead of saying I want a company where people are communicating very well and in a great deal but give me autonomy, he said, I've worked in both places. I've worked where there's a lot of walls up, where you have, like he talked about the
chain
of command.
You're right. That was so subtle that I didn't even catch that.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. So like a hierarchical place is not right for you. Mm-hmm. So it was more than communication that you got across when you were giving that example, but it didn't feel like, oh, I worked at a place that was, the communication was not what I wanted it to be,
yeah.
which that could have gone that
sure.
way, but you really talked about it in a productive way that was forward moving and that you learned from that experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
The last thing I'll say is just at the questions at the end, you asked some great questions, and this is for all of our listeners out there. One thing that I always discourage people from asking in the first interview, you mentioned fun perks. So anytime, it's not necessarily a bad thing, and I get coming from Apple and that sort of a mm-hmm. thing, it obviously is natural for you because you're in these kind of like googly environments. Mm-hmm. But to any of our listeners out there, during a first interview, you want to avoid, if you can, any conversations about benefits, salary, anything like that, unless the employer broaches it.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts on that, Allison?
Yeah, and you can ask that in a different way, too. Like, you can kind of subtly get at, like, do you have a lot of fun? That's kind of what...
Yeah.
Like, what's the culture like is a great question. Three words to describe
mm-hmm.
the culture might
mm-hmm.
kind of, clarify that
for
you.
I think that's more what I was going for. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, culture, team dynamics.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're wondering. What's
mm-hmm.
the fun stuff? Is there, ping pong in the basement?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Allison, any other thoughts for you?
No, I think you did a really great job. Your answers were really honest and really showed what you love about your job. It's really important that people are authentic.
I was going to say that. I circled and wrote down authentic.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was great.
I really felt your love for what you do and how you enjoy it.
Good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You're hired.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
So, Mike, anything else for you that you want to say about how the experience was for you?
This was actually a lot of fun. One, because there was no pressure to get the job. So I think that being able to have that kind of in your box is nice. But No, it's just incredible to have somebody else look at your interview process, because you never really hear this other side of it. Mm-hmm. You could leave thinking like, oh, I nailed it, and then just saying, oh, no, that's not what we're looking for at all. So it's nice having that critique, and there are definitely things I'll take from this.
Yeah, it's very helpful, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and just one final point. I know we're wrapping up, but is, you know, if you walk out of an interview and you've been your authentic self, if you're not the right fit, thank goodness
don't
that
change
knew.
Anything,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's better on a first date to find out you're not the right fit than, you know, three yeah. kids later. Because that, you know, it wouldn't have
so
been a good
true.
Fit later, mm-hmm. and you would have realized that the hard way.
Yeah.
So it's if you show up authentic and the best version of yourself, you can't lose. Even if you don't get the job, you can't lose.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful point to leave our listeners with. So again, you're tuning in to Get Yourself the Job on LA Talk Radio. You can also find us on iTunes in case you missed the live show. You can find us on iTunes and download at your leisure, or you can also find us in the archive of the show. And next week, I will be out of town, and I'm very grateful that Allison will be here, and you will all be in great hands with Allison and Lori.
Yes.
Anything else you want to say about next week's show, Allison?
No, I'm looking forward to having Lori. And for those of you in Los Angeles, I do just want to mention that I am doing a workshop series, and it's in the Mar Vista Library, and it'll be Tuesdays in September. So my website has more information, and my website's just my name, which you can find on the archives of the show. So I look forward to seeing you next week, maybe on the radio and maybe in person.
Awesome. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. And again, we're very excited, up to almost 10,000 listeners a month. So thank you to each and every one of you for tuning in and making this show possible. Have a wonderful week, LA, and stay cool.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.